Well, hello and welcome to the Voices of Courage show. Today we take a courageous look into one of the deepest humanitarian crises facing America today, the epidemic of child abuse and neglect. Behind closed doors in communities across our nations, millions of children are suffering in silence, carrying emotional wounds that often last a lifetime. The statistics are heartbreaking. According to the national welfare data, more than 530,000 children in the United States are confirmed victims of abuse and neglect each year. The experts believe that the real number is far greater than this because so many cases go unreported. Studies estimate that one in four children in America will experience some kind of abuse or neglect during childhood. That's terrible. The effects ripple far across childhood itself. Research from the CDC shows that adverse childhood experiences often result in increased risk of depression, anxiety, addiction, chronic illness, suicide, and even shortened lifespan. Trauma that is left unresolved does not simply go away. It often echoes through families and through generations. But this conversation today is not only about pain, it's also about awakening compassion, responsibility, and courage. It's about recognizing that every child deserves safety, dignity, love, and an opportunity to thrive. The truth is, we are one world family. And when one child suffers anywhere, humanity suffers everywhere. Truly, we need to come together as a nation and as a world to live with compassion, protection, and reverence for our children and for life. When society turns away from the suffering of children, we move further out of balance, we move further out of wisdom, we move further out of our shared humanity. So the healing crisis is going to, of course, take more than just awareness alone. It's going to take courageous hearts, conscious leadership, and communities willing to protect the innocent. It requires individuals who are willing to transform pain into purpose and compassion into action. You know, I could go on and on about this crisis because it's a big crisis, but we're going to be able to help you today as an audience really address if this is going on in your family. Maybe you don't know it's even going on. Sometimes it's well hidden, but we're going to get to some of the signs that you might look at if that's happening in your family. And also, we want to give you solutions today as to what you can do about it. Sometimes we watch programs like this and we think, wow, you know, I feel kind of helpless. I don't know what to do. Where do I go? Well, we have a way for you to really contribute today in a really big way. I have a very special guest today, and she's been on a mission for decades to help children overcome issues of child abuse, help families, and help all of us grow in love and compassion. She'll be with me in just a minute. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with my guest.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach. Here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Well, welcome back, everybody. And Sarah O'Meara, welcome to the Voices of Courage show.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
You know, you and I have done a bunch of my Heal It shows. It's really great to have you on my Voices of Courage show. We have such an important issue today to talk about.
Yes, we really do. It's affecting America. It's affecting every one of us. When there is a child abused, you will find that this goes through their whole life, and their life becomes actually terrorists, prostitutes, or whatever, because they don't feel worthy in the first place. And this affects all of us. I mean, physically, emotionally, spiritually, even financially, because it costs so much to take care of a child that has been abused when you do not get to the core of the problem in the first place. So it's very important that we, of course, prevent it if we can. We have programs for prevention. But also, once it happens, that child usually needs therapy. So there are different programs that's very important for children to get that help from the very beginning.
Wow. Well, before we take a deep dive into that, and thank you for setting us up with that. I'd like my audience to know a little bit more about you, Sarah. Sarah O'Meara, for those of you that don't know her, she's the internationally recognized co-founder of Child Help, one of the nation's leading nonprofit organizations dedicated to the prevention and treatment of child abuse. Alongside her lifelong friend and co-founder, Yvonne Feddersen, Sarah has spent more than six decades helping rescue, heal, and advocate for millions of abused and neglected children through crisis intervention, education, residential treatment programs, and Child Help National Child Abuse Hotline. She's also a best-selling author, humanitarian visionary leader. Sarah's extraordinary work has earned her recognition in the U.S. from presidents, world leaders, and communities around the globe for her lifelong commitment to giving children hope, healing, and a brighter future. And that just is a little piece of what you've done, Sarah. But I just want my audience to know a little bit about you. You know, you're right. This is a big problem today, you know. And so how are we going to solve this problem? Where does it start? I mean, doesn't it start in the minds of, or maybe it's generational? I don't know. What you've done this for many years.
Well, it has been proven that it's generational, that the cycle goes on. So you try to break that cycle so this does not continue. But that's not always the case. We find that children that have been abused come from drug addiction. It comes from people that are suffering themselves. Perhaps they're out of work. I know that through COVID, there were so many cases of child abuse, and they weren't reported because, you see, most of the child abuse cases are reported in schools, and they did not go to school. They were at home. The people at home, their parents were frustrated because they couldn't go to work, and so you had more child abuse than ever before. Now, we found that out after COVID because since there was no one to report it, that was covered up. But after the reporting was done, right after COVID, we had an avalanche, just an avalanche of children to take care of and help. Child Help takes care of the problem of child abuse, actually, from the very, very beginning. When I say that, I mean by residential care, if needed. That means that a child receives therapy, trauma therapy, and they also have help in education. Most every child that's abused is behind in school. That is kind of notorious for a find in child abuse. So at our residential treatment center, as an example, we have an on-public school for the children. And then when they graduate to their grade, we put them in a more normal circumstance where the bus comes to pick them up and they go to school, etc. But of course, the greatest thing, Ken, is to prevent it in the first place. And that is one of our main programs.
Let me, before we get into the program, let me ask you a question, because I think that it's kind of a simple question, but I'm wondering if people really understand the meaning of child neglect, child abuse. Can we define that for people? Because I think there's children out there that are in child, they're being neglected or they're being abused, and the parents aren't necessarily defining that, or the grandparents aren't necessarily defining that as abuse. Can you kind of enlighten us a little bit on what this really means?
Well, child abuse is anything that affects a child physically, mentally, or even spiritually. So the child abuse is where people cannot control themselves, or they just have within them such a dark side that they enjoy the horrible things that they do to a child. And of course, they need treatment too. But most of our cases in where we take care of the children in residential care, their abuser are in jail because of the type of abuse children we have. These are children that have seen their siblings murdered in front of them, one parent or the other murdered. Certainly, their home life is horrible. So when you define abuse, it also can be mental abuse. And when I say that, you may not touch a child, but you can make a child feel so unworthy, so bad about themselves, they no longer want to live. In fact, we have many children that have tried to commit suicide in our programs because they don't value themselves. They are not valued, and so they do not value themselves. Child abuse is a hideous thing that has happened in our country and every country. But I have to tell you, they say that the United States is the worst. Now, that's hard to believe, but that is exactly what statistics have proven.
Well, you know, that mental abuse, of course, you know, it as you mentioned earlier, it ends up in, you know, possibly suicide, but definitely, you know, depression, you know, and also chronic illnesses down the road. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, I don't know, we have an obesity crisis in this nation, but, you know, I wonder about that, because I think a lot of people are eating their emotions, you know, and a lot of that might be childhood, you know, related, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah. So where do we go with, tell me a little bit about child help, okay? Like, let me back up a little bit. So how did child help form? Why is it in, you know, where is it now today? You know, let's go from those two extremes. Where it formed and where we are today.
Well, 67 years ago, Yvonne, the co-founder of Child Help, and I were selected as actresses to entertain our troops. We were very thrilled about going to this trip because it was to Korea, Okinawa, and Japan. And they had 500 applicants wanting to take this particular USO tour. And as actresses, and we went on different days, and they didn't even know we knew each other, and yet we were the two chosen. And that particular choice changed our life. The whole trip changed our life. We had no idea what was in front of us, because we hit the typhoon season in Japan, worst winter they'd ever had in Japan, worst typhoon they'd ever had. And we, Yvonne and I, walked out to see the devastation that occurred from the typhoon several days later and found 11 children huddled together to fend off the cold. And they were crying. They had no shoes on, no jackets. And we said, "Where do you belong?" And they couldn't speak English, but they did say to us, "No mama-san, no papa-san." So we took them back to our military hotel and gave them a hot bath and fed them, and then approached the colonel who had been assigned to us to oversee our tour. And we told him we had these children in our room that we needed to find a place for. Would he help us? Well, first of all, he nearly fainted that we had the children in the first place in the hotel. But he said, "I can't help you at all. You have to put the children back out on the street. There's no way that I can help you." And we said, "Well, we're not going to do that. So please help us find a list of orphanages." And he said, "I'll give you the orphanages, but it's up to you to place them." So we put the children in a cab that was a base cab. And so fortunately, the cab driver spoke English and Japanese. And we took them from orphanage to orphanage. And the story was always the same. It was overcrowded and they couldn't take them. So we had to sneak the children back into our hotel room to spend the night and again pursue trying to find a home for them the following morning. We had the same cab driver. He got all involved with us in trying to find a place for the children. But as we came to the last orphanage on the list, they said, "Oh, these children here, they're no Japanese. They're American Japanese. No way, no way to take this. No funding for this. No stipend for the government. No, these children." So we took the children in hand and met with the colonel again and said, "Look, these are ours. They're half American, half Japanese. They're children without a country. They don't have a birth certificate. If we don't help them, nobody will." And he did introduce us to the head of Tokyo Gospel Missions, and our name was Juan. He was very, very lovely and wanted to help us, but he was going back to the United States. He had dual citizenship because he was half American, half Japanese, but of course a grown man. But he did introduce us then to a woman who he said once in a while he had heard that she took the child of mixed blood, as they call it. And we went to her home, supposedly, but it was indeed a hut. And I mean a hut. It had no front doors, no window panes. You could readily see two rooms, one on which she was cooking around a hibachi, and the other one there were 10 little children huddled together to fend off the cold in those two rooms. And we said, "Would you take our children?" And she said, "I don't have the money to take care of these children. I have no funding coming in. I can't take them. I would like to, but I can't." And we found ourselves saying, "We promise you we'll come back tomorrow morning, and we will have blankets, and we will care for the children, and we will take care of the ones you have too." So that night, that day, we became mama-sans of 21 children. We stopped our show that night that we were going for the servicemen and told them that we had these children we found on the street. And we said, "Listen, some of these might be yours. You have to help us." And they showed up the next morning with stolen army blankets and with sea rations and lumber. And we made at least a warm, comfortable place. But then people found out about it that had the mixed blood child, and they left children on the doorstep. And so before we left home to come home from Japan, we had over 100 children entrusted in our care. If we didn't take care of them, nobody else would. We came back and started an organization. We lived in California at the time. And Yvonne and I raised the funds to build 4 orphanages for the half-American, half-Japanese child. As time went on, 13 years later, Congress wanted to salute us for what we had done. We didn't even know they knew about it.
I gotta take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into the Congress. We'll get that next step. We'll be right back for here. Welcome back, everybody. I'm here with Sarah O'Meara, the co-founder of Child Help, and we are discussing a little bit about how Child Help was actually started. So go ahead, Sarah, your story. Now you're in Congress.
Well, yes, Congress saluting us for our work. And going over on the plane, I said to Yvonne, you don't think they're going to ask us to go into Vietnam, do you? And she said, well, if they do, we have to say no, because our husbands are going to really get upset if we take on more. Because as it was, we were consumed with that work. But they showed us pictures in Congress. They did give us the award, but they showed us pictures of the most pitiful children and said, the Commandant of the Marine Corps was there and said, we will give you General Lewis W. Walt that will be ahead of all your orphanages if you will help us do the same thing that you did in Japan. We both in unison said, oh, we'd love to. We got back on the plane. We said, why did you say that we'd do that? And we both blamed each other. However, we ended up building 5 orphanages, a hospital for orphans, and a school for orphans in Vietnam. Little did we know that the Vietnam War would come to an end and our children would be in peril. When we found out that we were pulling out of Japan, of Vietnam, we said to General Walt, what are we going to do with our children? You know they'll be killed because of their American heritage. So the Viet Cong, that will be the first thing that they do practically. You have to help us. We want to get the children out of there. It was a long story about how this all unfolded, but we did start the Vietnam Baby Lift. Got a lot of people to help us, World Airlines, the military. We all got together. And I will have to say that every single child that reached our shore were adopted before they ever got off that plane. What we did was contact the people that headed orphanages and ask them if they had families that had already been okayed, because we had children that were coming in, and they were coming in that week. And so we brought thousands of children to this country. Now, we really thought that our job was finished by then, because most of our children had grown up in Japan. And of course, now the Vietnam, we brought them here. However, that was only God's plan number one for us. You know, our favorite Bible verse from Jeremiah is, for I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper and not harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. So one could readily see that the plans that unfolded in our lives became a divine assignment, because it was God's plan from the very beginning that we would take care of these children. We would not be actresses at all. And so, as God's plan continued, it was extremely interesting, because we were asked a lot to speak about the baby lift and how we organized it and what happened. And at one of those talks, which was quite a large gathering at the old Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, we were on the dais with the Reagans. And when we came back from talking about how we organized the baby lift, etc., it was Nancy Reagan who put out her arm to stop us and say, you two are just the two to do it. And we said, do what? And she said, child abuse. It's the worst the worst kept secret in America, and it's ruining our children, and no one wants to deal with it. The laws protect the perpetrator, not the child. You have done the impossible with unpopular wars and everything else to take care of the children. You're the two to do this. And we said, well, we've never heard of child abuse. And besides, we'd have to really do a feasibility study to find out about this hidden issue. And I said, and besides, we don't have the money right now to start anything else. And she turned to Ronnie and she said, I know where we can get that money. Don't you, Ronnie? And winked. And he said, yep. And do you know that the next morning, there was a check from the Reagans personally that was delivered to my doorstep the following morning? So there was nothing to do but to do a feasibility study. And when we did, we found out nothing was being done about it, no plans to do anything about it. And Nancy was absolutely correct. The laws protected the perpetrator. So the very first thing we did was gather together anyone of substance in different areas of law enforcement, of hospitalization, of everything in under the sun that dealt with children that would be abused, and ask, what do we do? What do we do about this? And they all agreed we had to get the news out to the general public, what was happening to its children. So we would have to do television specials. And oh, yes, yes, that's what we should do. But then we looked at each other and we found out nobody was doing anything that we could really show about what to do about it. Would stir up everybody and they'd say, we want to help. What do we do? And we didn't have anything for them to do exactly as far as a program was concerned. So we began, first of all, to change laws. Yvonne and I went to Washington and spent a lot of time in changing the laws to protect the child, and particularly to save the people that would say to anyone else that child abuse, if they reported child abuse, they could be sued. If the judge said, well, the child could have fallen down the stairs, that's why the bruises were there or whatever, then they could turn around and sue the informant. And so we changed those laws that they could not do that. If anyone was in good faith reporting it, they could not be sued. So we worked really hard at that. And then we realized to have a television special, we did need to have something going on. And that is when we opened the very first residential treatment center in America for strictly abused children. And that led to another open door. And that was, so many people called us that the lines, the whole phone lines were shut down in our area where the village was, which was Boma, California.
Right. Wow. Well, that's quite the start. And it's interesting because, you know, back then when you started it again, you know, there wasn't a lot of awareness around it, but there is a lot of awareness around it today. And, you know, and it's still going on. In fact, it seems like it's increased over the years. When I come back from my break, what I'd like to you to describe is the residential treatment, if you can, a little bit about what the children, how they're benefited through the child help process and what happens when they come out on the other side. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everybody. We're Sarah O'Meara with the Child Help. And for those of you that are out there and you're thinking, you know, I'd really like to find out about Child Help, you can, we're putting on the screen childhelp.org. That's an area where you could go, you could donate, you could find out how to get involved, childhelp.org. Sarah, when they come into the organization, what happens? What happens to the child?
Well, we have different programs, but the one program of the residential what you're referring to, the child comes in and is interviewed as to what is best. We have psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists. They all meet and find out about what has happened to the child, the best way for treatment, so they can treat the child holistic in every area that we possibly can. We have programs there that most residential treatment facilities that are in existence today do not have, like equine therapy, art therapy, camping therapy. We have every kind of therapy that, well, that's available, and then some, I think. So we take the child and deal with that child individually as to what has happened in their life, how to treat them. And then we, of course, put them in school and teach and bring them up to grade level if they're not, and most of them are not. And the main thing we do is to give them confidence in themselves. There are children that come in and you'll ask them what their name is and they'll say, bad kid. And we'll say, no. What is your name, honey? Bad kid. That's what they think your name is. And one little boy told us his name was Mistake. Mm-hmm. And we said, no, sweetheart, what's your first name? What do they call you? He said, Mistake. That's all they knew in their life. So they have to almost be reprogrammed as such. We have a minister on our grounds. They call him Mr. Chapel Man. And when they find out that there's a God who loves them and will protect them, you can't imagine what this does for a child's inner spirit. And so every single thing that we can think of to give that child, and what we do is try to find out what God has gifted in them, because God gives us each of a gift. He has a plan for each of our lives, every one of us. And we try to find out what that child is particularly interested in, what they're gifted in. We give them special lessons in that. There was a little girl that was so pitifully abused, and she couldn't do anything, and she was behind in everything. And the only thing she could do was turn cartwheels. And she seemed to just be so gifted in gymnastics. So we gave her special lessons for that. And one day, out on the playground, the teacher said, we're going to have little Laura show us what she can do. And she turned cartwheels. She did everything that most children could not do. And everybody came up to her, and they wanted to learn how from her. It changed her whole life, her whole being. So the main thing we do is try to teach the child confidence and also forgiveness, forgiving the person that has abused them, because we explain to them that they weren't thinking right, that they didn't know God probably as they did. So we change their whole little being. And once then that they can fit into the next step, which may be a foster home, or it could be residential care where someone that is a relative of the abuser will take a child, whatever that step is for that child, adoption. I was at the village in on the East Coast, our village, several weeks ago, and this little boy met me and put his arms around me and said, Sarah, I'm adopted. And he was going to his adoption home that month. So they can be adopted. Every child has a different story, a different being, a different place to go. But those are the things we do in treating a child. And, you know, when I was there the other day, it really brought tears to my eyes because so many of the children came up and said, thank you for this place. I don't know what I would have done without the village. And so they appreciate it. They realize that there's love there. We have tremendous staff that have such a love. It's not a job to them. It's a mission. And these children brought tears to everybody's eyes that went with me because they wanted me to know how much they appreciate it. And I'm talking about children that are 6 years old, 7 years old, 8 years old. No, I'm not talking about teenagers. And so they get it. They know when they're loved. And they talk about it. They talk about love. And so sweet how they talk about their staff and what they have learned. So it's really... it takes a lot of effort, time, and resources to rebuild a child from abuse, but it is so worth it. But what I was going to tell you is when we opened that residential treatment center and received so many calls from all over the United States, that caused us to open our National Child Abuse Hotline. And it is a hotline that the government uses. And that hotline now... brings in close to 150,000 calls a year. But the great thing about it is we can answer their questions, tell them where to go for help, what to do. Many children call from closets and underneath desks or wherever, and they're scared to death that somebody's going to hear them, but they'll say, I'm being beaten and I got your number and I don't know what to do. So we get help to them while we still stay on the phone, wherever they are in the entire nation, as well as Canada. And
Sarah, I understand that there's professionals on the other end of those lines. It's not just some high school kid or somebody that's just paid a low salary to be there. There's actual professionals.
Yes, you're very astute to say that because that is a very important part. We do not do this on volunteerism. We do this with degreed professionals, PhDs even. And the way in which you can deal with that child can make or break the next step in that child's life. And it could be to save their life, literally, or to make it so much better that they know what to do and where to go or to whom they should speak. So that is a great thing to do. But also our prevention program, it's in schools. And this past year, we took care of 351,766 children in our prevention program. The prevention program in schools, boys and girls clubs, and the different areas where we speak about it, it tells them where they can go, what they should do, and what even child abuse is. Because many children in grammar school, we're the only ones, by the way, that are evidence-based from kindergarten through high school for our prevention program. And when you get a child before they're abused, gets really bad, and they know where to call, what to do, to give them confidence to talk to the person, their teacher or whatever, and save them the rest of their life, and maybe save their entire life. So prevention is a great, great program.
And Sarah, what is the child abuse hotline number? What is that?
1-800, the number 4, a child. 1-800-4-A-CHILD.
Very good. Okay. Wow. All right. Well, you know, I know this organization doesn't run. I mean, it runs on a lot of love. I know that. But it also, you know, you have big budgets. You have people that need to be paid. And there are people listening right now that I know are going to go, you know, I'd really like to donate to the cause. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'll tell you something. Whatever anyone can do to save a child, what you're doing is making a difference in the next generation. And we are held responsible for that. God's word talks about that. We are responsible for what we leave the world. And so when you help a child, you're doing more than just helping that one child. And believe me, what it does to your own heart to give, it can't even be mentioned the correct word of what it does for you as an individual. And the money goes to a good place because we are very, very good about making sure that that money reaches the child and in no other way. We have any amount that you can give. You can give $10 a month. You can give $10 and that's the end of it. You can give $100. You can give $1,000. You can leave us in your will, in your estate. There are so many different ways that you can help. But believe me, that investment is the best that you could ever make.
Yeah. Yes, it's going to help the life of a child. And when you help one life of one child, you help us all. Quite frankly, you're helping yourself, you're helping your family, you're helping this nation step up in awareness and consciousness and be more responsible. It's just, you know, we're all here in it together. We're one family here. And as soon as we start to understand that more and more, it's a lot easier for all of us to give. That's what I know. Yeah. Sarah, final thoughts on this. We got about 2 minutes. What would you like to share with our audience as we close out this segment?
Well, I would like to share that they remember this. God has a plan for each of you that are listening, for each of us. When we come into this world, He gives us a mission. And then if you really turn to God and let Him guide you, then you are adhering to the mission that He gave you. And as we look, Yvonne and I look back about our mission, we can see God's plan all the way through it, step by step, finding the children, first of all, being selected, finding the children on the street, taking care of them. That led us into Vietnam. Building an orphanage to save those children. That led us into the Vietnam baby lift, saving lives that may never have been saved otherwise. And then the next step was that we would go into child abuse, because we would have never met the Reagans had we not done the other things that God wanted us to do. So when we met the Reagans and we took child abuse on, we now have so many organizations that are helping in the child abuse arena. So that may never have happened if it hadn't been for the Reagans. But that was all in God's plan from the day that we found those 8 children. But He also has a plan for each one of you that I want you to realize how valuable you are. And if you don't follow God's plan and let Him lead you, it's like a wobbly heel, a tire. When a stone is in a tire and it wobbles, the whole thing gets off. So you're part of the whole. And when you don't give of yourself with what God has given you to do for your talents, your gifts, then life is off balance. That takes everybody off because everyone is important and everyone has a different gift. If they all had the same gift, it would certainly be out of whack. But just remember this, that God loves you so much more than any love that we can possibly imagine. And he does have a plan for you. But in order to give that plan, you have to make the choice. And that choice is, am I going to follow God? Am I going to let him lead me? And if you do that, you have made the greatest decision in your whole life that will lead you everywhere. And it will lead you into happiness and joy like you can't get anyplace else.
Thank you, Sarah. That was profound. I appreciate you. I thank you for all you do, all the work you do, all the love you bring into this world, and all the children you protect and help. I just adore you, and I'm so glad you could be here with us today.
Well, thank you very much. And I appreciate your having me, and I appreciate your audience listening.
Alrighty. And I want to thank all of you for listening today. You know, there is a cost to doing nothing, right? We talked about it on the show. You know, untreated childhood trauma leads to addiction, leads to depression, homelessness, mentally incompetent individuals, and it affects all of us in society. You know, and there is power in early prevention, right? So that's where you can make a difference today. Maybe you haven't had the courage to go out and, you know, let the authorities know about child abuse if it's going on in your world, right? So you can call today the 1-800-4-A-CHILD. You can do that. You can talk to a counselor there, let them know what's going on, what you see. You know, you can have the child call that number. So there are ways that you can impact the lives of so many children. And listen, it's, you know, when you change one life, you change the life of all of us, quite frankly. I know that's a hard concept to get, but listen, we are all connected. And at some level, you know that that's true. So I hope you will take this show today, pass it around to people that you care about, that you love, and share it with them, share it from your heart. And give them the child abuse line. Also, give them the website, childhelp.org, where you can contribute right now. You know, one of my mentors says, never leave the site when your heart is touched. Always take action when your heart is touched. That's basically his message. Always to take action. So if your heart's been touched, then hope you take action immediately. Again, thank you for being with us. Until next time, I hope you too continue to see the unseeable, know the unknowable, and do the impossible, and you will if you keep watching these shows. Take care. We'll be right back.